Tô bom, a gente vem.
Now, would you like to hear from Mr. Carr first, or myself on the question?
I'm pretty relaxed about that, actually.
Okay. All right, I'll go first then.
Okay, I know my place.
So you asked me, the main point I wanted to expand on further is you asked me to explain how, in your reading, the legal rationale for an about-face.
Yes.
But I disagree that it's an about-face because the submission was already always expressed conditionally, so it's not an about-face, it's still a conditional position. But what I want to take you through briefly is the Jardine's original submission, what it purported to seek, and then where our submission is at, based on those methods that were expressed conditionally in our further submission. The Jardine's original submission made no reference to how the airstrip would be integrated into the zone. It acknowledged the presence of the airstrip on its cover page, but in terms of the activity areas and any provisions, it was completely silent on how that airstrip would be integrated or even if they'd considered its integration. Paragraph 3.1 of the Jardine submission said that the purpose of the extension was to provide new housing. No reference to recreational activities or airstrips. Paragraph 3.5 referenced the majority of the activities being sought as being residential in nature, and then noted the non-residential EIC aspect that was originally part of the proposal, but again, no reference to airstrips or commercial recreation. Paragraph 3.6 talks about Lot 8 being managed as a single farm, as OSL, but the airstrip is, I understand, on Lot 6, so there wasn't even any reference to how Lot 6, part of the proposed OSL, would be managed.
When you go to principal release 4, it says extension of the Jack's Point zone to include the entire area affected on the plans contained in attachment B.
Yes.
And that included the airstrip.
That's right. So the default position in terms of their relief sought is that the airstrip would be in an area of OSL and it would sit with that non-compliant status that's currently in Table 1, where any application to review or amend that existing resource consent be evaluated, be considered.
So you're saying then that in terms of the airstrip, even though it wasn't mentioned in the first submission, the submission was supported of being non-compliant?
Yes. That's one way of putting it, but the conditional aspects of our further submission were we said conditional support subject to refinements to the structure plan and changes to the provisions. To ensure, one of the key phrases we used was to ensure integration with the purpose of the zone. Overall integration, and the other key phrase in the further submission was that it's sensitively designed and limited residential and other activities that complement and do not adversely affect or detract from the wider Jack's Point zone activity areas.
Well, it says a sensibly designed marina village. Sensibly designed and limited residential and other activities. Okay. I'm still not sure, though, how, given all that, the Residents Association can say that it's inappropriate to see the houses from the existing Jack's Point.
Oh, I'm just focusing on the airstrip
first.
I'm
just focusing on the airstrip first.
Yeah.
But if we accept that position, then we've got to go to the other one, which is the fact that you can see houses is fully expected from both the submission and the further submission supporting it.
Yeah, no, as we discussed yesterday, that's sort of the least of the JPRA's concerns, and you know, we haven't called landscape evidence, but we've acknowledged that three of the residents have explicitly opposed the extension on that basis. One of those residents is also a landscape expert, and Tim Williams is a planner with urban design experience as well. So
we're, or an urban designer or planner.
Yeah, we're coming to the So it's on the back, it's primarily in support of those, you know, there is collective scope obviously for that issue to be at play, regardless of the fact that the starting point is a rural zone anyway. So that question is primarily in support of those three residents and the last of those three residents points of view. In the case I thought it was on point, it was not on point. So,
right.
And I looked and couldn't. There's actually very few cases on the detail of what one can do to a further submission based on the
change of submission. Yeah, I've often asked for further submissions, and they seem to be ignored most of the time.
Yes, yeah. I guess the other point that you probably got to anyway is whether or not there is actually any jurisdiction for, you know, were you to approve the zone extension to cover the airstrip land. Whether or not there's even any jurisdiction to change the status of informal airports from non-compliant, which is the position, position as advanced by the submitter, by default. So that you'll be lucky.
Okay,
thank you. Right, so we've got a little summary statement from Mr. Carr.
Of certain key information from the evidence in chief of Mr. Bartlett meant that I had been unable to identify the changes in queues and delays that could arise as a result of the permitted development. Consequently, I was also unable to assess the effect of queues and delays arising from the additional 541 lots that could occur if the rezoning of homestead base sought by the submitters was to be accepted. Mr. Bartlett has now provided additional transportation modelling information. He's assessed two scenarios. One being all traffic passing through the State Highway 6 and Mighty Jack Road intersection, and the other being all traffic from the requested 541 additional lots passing through a new intersection on the highway. I note that in all of his modelling, Mr. Bartlett has allowed 800 residences to be developed within the existing Jack's Point zone. However, I understand from Mr. Ferguson that the maximum permitted yield within the Jack's Point zone is 1,458 residences. I understand that may increase further with the approval of PC 44. So that is that it appears that Mr. Bartlett has significantly underestimated the amount of traffic that could use Mighty Jack Road as of right. In passing, in his evidence in chief, Mr. Bartlett referred to a permitted development yield of 1,430 residences in Jack's Point, and it's not clear to me why his subsequent modelling has used a lower figure. His modelling of the future scenarios with an increased yield from Homestead Bay allows for a total of 1,585 residences. That's 800 in Jack's Point plus 785 in Homestead Bay. But the yield that's already permitted is 1,702 residences. That's the 1,458 residences in Jack's Point plus the 244 in Homestead Bay. The supplementary statement, therefore, does not present any analysis of the true scenario arising in the submission of 2,243 residences. So that's the 1,458 committed at the moment, plus the 785 in Homestead Bay. As a result of this, none of Mr. Bartlett's analyses demonstrate the effects of the additional residences sought by the submitters at the intersection. I therefore remain of the view expressed in my rebuttal statement that no assessment has been presented of the traffic-related effects of the submission to show that the additional residences will not have adverse outcomes. Consequently, I'm also of the view that the increased yield should not be treated as of right, but an assessment of the traffic effects is required once more than 244 lots are sought. Insofar as this relates to the effects of the State Highway 6 Mighty Jack Road intersection, the analysis is fairly discreet and would relate to the increases in queues, delays, and road safety risks that would arise due to the higher traffic flows. Within Jack's Point, however, the effects of the additional traffic would be more wide-ranging. Mr. Bartlett identifies that the carriageway and footpaths of Mighty Jack Road would need to be widened to accommodate the extra vehicles. And in my experience, this typically can have effects on people's ability to cross the road, as well as on landscaping, noise, and other amenity. These issues have not been discussed or assessed. We also consider that there will be changes in traffic flow on other internal roads within Jack's Point due to residences of the additional Homestead Bay lots travelling to visit friends or relations or to visit the commercial areas. In concept, I support this internal travel, partly because it means that the journeys will not be required to take place using the state highway, and partly because it aligns with the overarching concept of Jack's Point to be an integrated community. However, as I noted in my rebuttal evidence, in my view, this requires assessment of the changes on those internal roads to ensure that they remain appropriate for the increased number of movements of all types of road use. This hasn't been done. That said, I also acknowledge that an absence of an assessment of the traffic effects of the submission does not necessarily mean that adverse outcomes will definitely occur, or if they do occur, that they can't be mitigated. Bluntly, in my view, there remains no information from which to reliably draw any conclusions either for or against. On this basis, I consider that assessment of the traffic-related effects should be carried out when more than 244 residences are sought within Homestead Bay, and due to the potential effects of the additional traffic movement on disciplines other than transportation planning, I consider that the intensification requested by the submitters should have at least a discretionary activity status. And I'm happy to answer any questions.
Isn't the other matter that hasn't been considered the second access which is presently being built into the Jack's Point zone?
RCL on
Emigrants
Access?
Yes.
Yes. And there's a cumulative effect which arises potentially as a result of the traffic, because they're all feeding onto the state highway, so the vehicles emerging from one intersection will potentially block another intersection as well, so it requires a bit more of a holistic approach.
That was apparent from one of Mr. Bartlett's modelling exercises, which showed that the more southern one will have effects on the Mary Jackman without the traffic using it. Yes.
Yes. Yeah.
So that would also occur at the next one, and then if Walshley the road was ever developed at that one as well.
Yes, potentially. Yeah. And that's why I think it requires that sort of comprehensive approach, and that isn't sitting within the submission.
So it's fair to say that in terms of traffic, we're sitting in an area surrounded by a large amount of ignorance. Is that probably the way to
put it? Some would classify the whole of the discipline as that sort of
thing. Yes, well, there is that.
yes, as I said, there's no information before you at the moment that enables you to make a reasoned decision one way or the other at the moment. It's a technical exercise to do it, but that technical exercise hasn't been done.
Any more questions?
So, one thing you haven't discussed, although you have mentioned Mr. Bartlett did extensively discuss a scenario 2, which involved part of the traffic using the new access to be constructed.
Yes.
And I take from what you said, you still wouldn't be satisfied with it. And he did his analysis and proved that it was unsatisfactory and that the traffic would be okay. But what he hasn't done, you'd probably say, wouldn't you, that he's still using a far too low generation rate because of his extra housing.
Yeah, so I think I've got a copy of Joseph's evidence here. And I think there's two things. You're right in that he has, in my view, significantly underestimated the existing receiving environment by using 800 residences within Jack's Point rather than what can occur as of right. But even under scenario two, his description of what's required by Murray Jack Road is still there. That's right. So he's still within both his scenario one, scenario two, talking about widening Murray Jack Road and those amenity effects that they alluded to that again haven't been there.
When you talk about widening Murray Jack Road, is that all the way down to the New Road?
Well, it's not clear.
That's a really interesting question.
I've quote from his evidence, it says, increased capacity of Mindrack Road linked for vehicle traffic and pedestrians, in particular, increasing the footpath provision on Mindrack Road and widening the existing side road intersection with Jack's Point. So it's not clear the extent to which he's talking about either the length of the road that would need to be improved or the particular nature of the improvements that he has in mind.
Another matter which I put to Mr. Barton, everybody's using a relatively high peak car traffic ratio rate, 0.83 or 0.9 or something.
Yeah.
I was a bit of a that seemed high for a settlement like Jack's Point, with the number of holiday homes there and probably retired people and maybe people who part-time work from home and all those sorts of things. And he said, well, yes, he agreed, but he thought it was a conservative thing to do, but matters became some conscience that he was right. But
yeah.
And now having gone further and said, well, there's too, he hasn't used enough residences. Wouldn't the lower peak hour traffic generation rate offset that?
It would certainly offset that. But there's a number of factors in play, one of which is the extent to which Jack's Point achieves this aspiration of an integrated community, which would then mean that people would live in Jack's Point, would shop in Jack's Point, and would travel externally from time to time, but not to the same extent as if there was only residences within Jack's Point. But even when I'm trying to think, the only scenario that I can think of that was assessed in the district was Lakehays Estate before that little commercial area was constructed. It had been consented for a while, but it didn't go in for quite a while. And that meant that Lakehays Estate was entirely residential. And that was showing traffic generation rates that were 0.7 to 0.8, something like that. I can give you the exact number if you need 2 minutes because it's just on plan change stuff. But it didn't show that there will be a dramatic reduction, and certainly not a sufficient offset to completely account for the 800 units versus the 1400 units difference in Mr. Bart's analysis.
But Lakehays would be different. Quite different in terms of its sort of profile problem. That's point, particularly in terms of the likes of holiday homes.
Well, potentially, but
well, one thing that's noticeable in shot of the country where I'm staying, and I presume it's the same in Lakehays, is a huge number of second apartments, which again are possibly aimed at the tourists on the travelling market and won't be contributing to the peak hour
And in fact, if I had looked at, if I was Mr. Bartlett and had looked at that sort of assessment, I would have gone back and said, well, what would the traffic generation rate need to be to make the intersections work, and then assess whether that was reasonable. Because if Mr. Bartlett had done the analysis and showed that a rate of 0.7 per unit was reasonable to make the intersections work, then you can justify that. If it comes up with a rate of 0.2, you'd probably say probably not. But again, that's that sea of ignorance that we have here, that there just hasn't been that analysis done to provide that robustness. We don't know. I accept the point that 0.9 rate is probably towards the upper end. It is the approach that the council has used historically for large plan change type sites to look at that robust type of scenario. That is, as I said, could be reduced, but we just don't know from the information presented.
And finally, the figures that you're now quoting are ultimately relevant, maybe a long time into the future.
Yeah.
And is that this kind of progressive improvement over time if they prove to be necessary?
Progressive improvement. There is scope for progressive improvements, but that doesn't preclude the analysis from being carried out on the correct receiving environment, I don't think.
Yeah.
And the receiving environment is what could occur as of right now, not fancifully. And given the amount of house building that's happening in the district, I don't think it's fanciful to expect that there will be a significant amount of development in Jackson Point in the further near future.
I accept the lack of information, but I'm quite I take note of your comment that the adverse in paragraph 13 that if the work, and I take it to mean if the work was done, it wouldn't necessarily mean there were adverse outcomes. So in a zoning issue, how much work needs to be done to be satisfied that changing the zone is okay, compared to on a resource consent, how much information you need. I mean,
sure.
I take you to be saying this, you could get all this work done and at the end of it all still might be fine.
Yeah, that's absolutely right. I mean, the
yeah.
general principle with this traffic assessment for a plan change is to demonstrate that there aren't any showstoppers
yeah.
to the improvement of the road network to accommodate the additional traffic. So it wouldn't necessarily be too much different from what you'd see in the resource consent in that regard. Hypothetically, if a roundabout was to be put in place, you would need to show that the roundabout could be constructed and there wasn't a major impediment against that. And if you could show that, then you would be able to rezone the land and say, well, at some point, the difficulty is that there hasn't been a demonstration of how these improvement schemes that Mr. Bartlett has relied upon would be achieved. The demonstration isn't there. If Mr. Bartlett had made a statement to say, here's what it would look like and here's my assessment, and I was able to support that assessment, then I think we'd have a different discussion. But his assessment, in my view, is not the correct assessment because of the underestimation of residences.
Okay.
And he hasn't shown how the improvements that he said are, quote, required, unquote, would actually be achieved or could be achieved.
But he also hasn't turned out a showstopper. I mean, he hasn't hinted at one or even made us all think there might be one being hidden.
I think he hasn't probably turned over enough rocks in what's in here. My gut feeling is there might not be a showstopper, but unless the analysis is done, it's just not possible to say. The analysis is not that different to what he's actually produced. It's just using slightly different parameters.
So, essentially, when Jaylene's appeared, they can see that, I think, that we go with scenario two, and that they conceded that to build that access would require A, agreement from NTTA, but B, they suggested a restricted discretionary activity status. The council, which is covering the same thing twice. So, to go with either of those applications, wouldn't there need to be the full analysis that you're talking about done at that time?
There would need to be the full analysis that was done at that time, but then for every plan change, there's always a transportation assessment that does essentially the same job as a transportation assessment for a resource consent, but probably doesn't drill down to the level of detail. Now, in this instance, we don't have public roads, but the council has always been very careful to make sure that any improvement scheme is required, that there is an ability to give effect to that improvement scheme. Mr. Barlow has talked about a requirement for improvements to the private road network, but hasn't discussed about how that would actually be achieved.
Still struggling to understand how, without the cooperation of the Jackpot Residents Association, they could even achieve it.
I think there's an element
without seeing the full term of the legal agreement.
Well, that's right, but it also comes back to that question that you asked previously, sir, which was what are the nature of the improvements, over what length are they going to be put in place? And we don't have an answer tonight at the moment. They may well be relatively minor, they may be a significant improvement in what's there at the moment, but we just don't know.
Just one final thing, Mr. Carr. Throughout your primary evidence, you referred to the Walshead Road, Kingston Road intersection. Was that intentional?
Walshead Road, which one?
Kingston State Highway.
Discussion that we had previously in respect of the need to consider the integrated whole, that simply moving traffic from one intersection to the other doesn't necessarily resolve all issues. But
so we're talking the about traffic, the right intersection is what I'm getting
yeah,
at.
Yeah. Well, certainly paragraphs 23. Walshead Road was to do with referencing Mr. Bartlett's evidence in chief as well.
I don't recall him talking about Walshead Road.
No, given that it's at the opposite end, in fact, Point Zone in Homestead Bay, it was I'm always tempted to say uninformed, but not quite uninformed.
I don't have a copy of Mr. Bartlett's evidence in chief, but I've got a reference to it in my evidence.
Yeah. 15 onwards, he references the Walshead Road intersection. This is the evidence in chief, not a supplementary.
There's a number of references to Walshead Road in my rebuttal evidence, which is actually my evidence in chief, which legitimately referred to the Walshead Road intersection, because they're responding to comments that Mr. Bartlett has made within his evidence in chief. But looking at a couple of them, there's at least one that I can spot out here, which is a misnomer, it should be right Jack Road. So there is probably a combination of that.
Probably got both traffic engineers dealing with something that doesn't exist.
Currently. Yeah.
Then is unlikely to for some time into the future.
The general principles of the
2045, perhaps, was what Mr. Barber referred to. That might be
peace 24. Yeah.
Okay.
Just trying to help you with your obvious line of inquiry about how much information do you need. Just doing this on the fly, as Scott would be able to assist you more, but the level of information that Section 32 evaluation would require, there might be some guidance there that gives you something to hang your hat on in terms of where is the line, where is the threshold of information that Section 32 evaluation requires. Section 32.1c requires a level of detail that corresponds to the scale and significance of the effects that are anticipated. And then obviously subsection 2.
It's required to know what the effects are first.
Yeah. Well, yeah, that's right. Exactly. Yeah. Yeah.
Section 32 is never very helpful.
No, it's not. That's not even a test. But you know, if you were looking for somewhere where there might be further assistance in saying where is that line, then there's also the requirement 32.2 to practically quantify the benefits and costs of the growth and the employment. So that's really what's going to help. So there might be some guidance and commentary in section 32 that takes you a little bit further. But I don't have it.
The employment. Created by winding roads.
By winding roads. Building cars. Houses.
Well, I'm always sort of curious about how much information is enough to make the first pass decision.
It's a discussion that I have with applicants. I'm changing projects on a fairly regular basis. The best that as a professional traffic engineers can offer is that you do the analysis of the plan change and then you dust it off and update it a little bit for the resource consents that then follow on. But generally, I'm trying to think of any of the alternatives that I've looked at, but I can't think of anything other than doing that analysis the first time around. You wouldn't, though, put in a detailed intersection improvement scheme. You simply have to say, well, the building you work with is wide enough to be able to accommodate the improvements that I've identified. So there's a little bit of a saving there, but the basic assessment of the traffic generation invariably sits within the plan change request.
Okay. Thank you very much.
Good, thank you for your time.
And I'll do them between 10 a.m. on Monday morning.